This is Joe Kelly from the KRLD Morning News. As you're listening to the mid-morning mic check, the rest of our team is hard at work in the 24-hour breaking news center. We'll break in immediately with severe weather, breaking news, and traffic red alerts.
And this is Chad Benson. I'll break through the noise and break down the day's top stories coming up at noon.
Now, the mid-morning mic check with Mike Rogers and Austin York on DFW's number one for news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1080 KRLD. Depend on it.
Continuing, it's 11:07 on a Tuesday morning here at KRLD. Mike Rogers, Austin York. It's your mid-morning mic check. Hey, don't forget, we got a podcast version of the show. A lot of people listening that way.
You know, and it's I really have to say thank you guys for tuning in that way because we're seeing our numbers go up. Really appreciate that. And, yeah, there's no commercials if you want to hear. I think we release it about an hour after the show is completely done. So do it that way if you want.
Your favorite Cowboys memories is what we're looking at today. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a great game or a great play, but something that was just, it was important to you that has you've remembered all these years.
I'll tell you one of mine. Cowboys playing the Raiders, L.A. Coliseum. Cowboys, this is 92 when the Cowboys won their first Super Bowl under Jimmy.
Yeah.
My dad almost got in a fight with some Raider fans who stole our seats. And you didn't want to get in a fight with a Raider fan in the L.A. Coliseum. My dad's not a fighter. He will not back down. And uh-oh.
I was
sitting there oblivious to this. My brother was scared to death because he thought Dad's going to get beat up. And we were totally outnumbered. And we had Cowboys gear on.
Look, man, any run-in with the Raider Nation.
Oh, and one guy said, if anybody cheers for the Cowboys, I'm going to stick them.
Wow.
we were kind of quiet after that. I was only 14. My brother was 11. Oh, bad times.
One of my earliest memories was the Ice Bowl. I think I was 7 years old. Dad went out. That was the first color TV that we ever had. He went out and bought it specifically to watch the Ice Bowl.
All right.
And he's so excited. He got the big, massive RCA and set that thing up. And we lived in a little duplex at the time. It took up half the living room.
That's right.
And he watched that Ice Bowl, man. And
those things weighed a ton.
Quarterback sneak at the end, Bart Starr. Dad was throwing beer cans at the TV.
Was he?
At his brand new TV.
He was throwing beer at the TV?
He was so mad.
Bought it, buddy.
He was probably missing intentionally, but
yeah.
So 9457-66-1080. You can let us know some of your favorite Cowboy memories. We'd love to hear those. We start out this hour with the latest from Seattle. Turns out it was kids who were responsible for the shootout this weekend at the base of the
Good
Space Needle.
Lord, this drives me crazy.
This left 3 people dead and 4 injured. One 15-year-old has been arrested, and they're looking for another one.
We know very little about that suspect, and that's what Seattle police have told us they are still searching for at least one other person involved, but they didn't rule out the possibility that there could be even more suspects. And they did try to ease tensions by saying the city is not in any apparent danger, but there are questions growing about whether there was enough security precautions taken before that violence broke out. Assistant Police Chief Tyrone Davis says that 2 people were shooting at each other at the Crowded Bite of Seattle Food Festival, a popular festival where families and people come together. This happened just after 6 o'clock on Sunday, and the bullets hit 7 bystanders. 3 people were killed, 4 others injured, including a 2-year-old child.
As of this morning, that toddler is still in the hospital, but is expected to survive.
Police were able to take one suspect described as a young person into custody who surrendered after being confronted by police, and 2 guns were recovered, ATF agents on the scene as well. Police touted how it only took first responders moments to get to the scene of the shooting, but some festival goers say that this could have all been prevented if there were more security measures.
With no security, no pat down, no search of the bag. Surprise, there's not any security walking around. Keep the people safe. Now, you should not be able to just walk up into this festival with all these people, with all these vendors, with no security.
Police are asking for any witnesses to come forward and reminding people that they can remain anonymous if they're concerned about their safety. There is a $5,000 reward for any information that would lead to an arrest right now.
It's News Nation's Mills Hayes. So again, they think 3 people are involved.
One's dead.
The 15-year-old's in custody, and his friend, a 19-year-old who was there, was killed.
Yeah, and apparently this is gang related, as they mentioned, but it's just ridiculous. This reminds us of the State Fair. Remember when that State Fair shooting happened a couple of years ago in the evening, and it was, again, gang related, and the guy was there was 19, I believe, that was arrested. Just ridiculous.
What a great place to pull out a gun and open fire.
Oh, my gosh.
In a huge crowd of people.
During a huge food festival. Just ridiculous. takes.
Next door to Washington State, meanwhile, in Idaho, remember this case? This guy last summer pleaded guilty to murdering four students at the University of Idaho. Mm-hmm. And now he's trying to take it back.
In a new interview from prison with the New York Times, Brian Koberger, who's serving four life sentences, says he now wants to withdraw his guilty plea and reopen his case. Koberger reiterated his innocence in a call with the Times, saying his plea hinged on false promises and blatant misinformation.
ABC legal analyst Brian Buckmeyer says this is a major long shot.
Most cases, whether you're in Idaho or other states, it's very difficult to turn back a plea once you've been sentenced. If you take a plea and you haven't been sentenced as yet, it's very easy. But specifically in Idaho, the standard is that there needs to be a manifest injustice. And that's extremely difficult to do in a situation like this, where judges, prosecutors, and defense attorneys are all trained on how to make sure that a defendant is properly informed, that they know they're taking a plea voluntarily, and that they're knowledgeable in the conditions of that plea. And so this would be an uphill battle for anyone. But when you talk about trying to take back a plea after a year, it adds even more layers to the difficulty of what Brian Koberger is attempting to do.
I just
this
being successful.
I don't either. He just said, you know what I just said a couple of years. Nah, I didn't do
that.
That,
never mind.
Yeah, in fact, that I was thinking about it a little bit, and then the more I convinced myself, you know, I didn't do this.
That is not going to fly.
That's the stupidest thing. And I remember those testimonies. Remember, we took some of that testimony live on the air.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, we had to hit the dump button a few times.
During the punishment phase.
That's right.
Oh, I remember that.
And, they were very fired up.
Kansas City Chiefs, meanwhile, continuing on this police blotter theme.
Boy, the Chiefs now are like the Cowboys in the 90s.
Unbelievable,
everyone's
man.
Getting rested.
More off-the-field drama for the Chiefs.
The wife of Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy is recovering in the hospital after authorities say she was shot by their son inside the couple's Virginia home.
57-year-old female reported shot in the chest and arm, unable to breathe.
Police called to the house Sunday night, saying they arrived to find Mia Bieniemy suffering from multiple gunshot wounds and taking her 27-year-old son, Elijah Bieniemy, into custody.
ABC's Pierre Thomas.
Earlier on Sunday, Coach Bieniemy was seen at the Chiefs training camp in Missouri for racing home to be at his wife's side.
Yeah, she's a saint. You know, we all know that. The people that know her. One of God's good blessings right there.
Chiefs head coach Andy Reid thankful Mia Bieniemy's condition is stable.
Now, Eric Bieniemy is now taking some time off to deal with all of this. This is just as the Chiefs begin training camp.
Yeah, I don't know what the situation is, but when you have your son shoot his mother several times, you know that something terribly wrong is going on with him and the family. So you just hope they can sort all that out. But yeah, the Chiefs, between this and Rashee Rice. He got busted. He's now with the team, but he got busted for breaking his probation, smoking weed, had to do 30 days in the can right up the road here at Lou Sterrett.
See, Andy Reid. Wow.
Yeah, okay. The more successful you become, the more issues sometimes you have.
That's right.
With off-the-field issues. So,
all right, favorite Cowboys memories. Rob is in the car on his way to Houston. He gave us a call and said his favorite memory was the implosion of the old Texas Stadium.
Standing right next to the Manster happened.
That's right. And I think he shed a tear.
That's right. All those great games inside there.
Yeah, the second favorite memory for Rob, he was working as a chauffeur. He ran into Jimmy Johnson and started a three-peat chant with Jimmy. This was right after the second Super Bowl win. Bob in Greenville gives us a call. Favorite memory, November of 68. His girlfriend's, now his wife's, drill team was performing on the sidelines at the Cotton Bowl during a game in the middle of a sleet storm. Sleet and snow coming down. And the Cowboys were getting killed by the Giants.
At least he married her.
My dad took me. The first Monday night game the Cowboys ever played was at the Cotton Bowl. The Cardinals. Cardinals came
so
in.
So that was, were they St. Louis or were they Chicago?
They were
still?
St. Louis.
St. Louis, okay.
And then it was cold, miserably cold, and the Cowboys got smoked. 38-0. And I remember sitting there as the first Monday night game ever. So Don Meredith's up in the booth.
Dandy Don.
He had just retired.
That's right.
From the Cowboys, and the crowd starts chanting, "We want Meredith."
And this is after they had booed him before, why he retired.
They want, in fact, I think Meredith said when they heard it, he said, "Ain't no way. No, that is not going to happen." Coming up on KRLD, 74 years after it vanished over the Atlantic, they have finally found the wreckage of the Pan Am Clipper Endeavor.
Oh, there it is.
I know, after all this time.
That's where I put that thing.
How could we have missed it? That story's coming up next. Stay with us.
The Mid-Morning Mic Check with Mike Rogers and Austin York on DFW's number one for news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1080 KRLD. Depend on it.
945-766-1080. If you want to participate in the show today, you can text or call.
Including Frida, who's really trying to just irk us today.
Yeah, I know. Frida, you know, it's one thing if you're a fan of another team, but you're a fan.
She's trying to rub it in.
She's basically a fan of any team that's playing the Cowboys.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like to me. She says another of her favorite memories was when they opened AT&T Stadium and lost the home opener to Eli and the Giants.
Yeah, I remember that. It was embarrassing.
2010, I think, like that.
Yeah.
And here's a good one. Listener writes in and says his favorite Cowboy memory was his first ever Cowboy game, and it was a good one. He went to the Thanksgiving Day game in 1974 where Clint Longley,
the Mad Bomber,
pulled it out for him.
What a great game to go to.
Passed to Drew Pearson, and then he comes back the following training camp and takes a cheap shot at Roger.
What an idiot.
Sucker punches him.
And then runs. Staubach said he turned around to fight him, and he was already out the locker room, and he had his car running, jumped in, and hauled ass out of there.
And they immediately traded him.
Oh, my gosh. You want to talk about a quick trade.
Wonder what Clint Longley's up to these days.
You don't punch Roger Staubach. Sucker punch.
Captain America. Yeah. No. Today marks 5 months since the war with Iran started. 5 months. No signs that it'll be ending anytime soon. Although President Trump has put off a promised escalation in the war. He's hoping to work things out, he says, through diplomacy instead. And why is that? Well, stock market's up and the price of oil is coming back down. That's always a factor.
Good.
And then there's the fact that in spite of what the Pentagon has said about the U.S. obliterating the Iranian army, they keep on firing those missiles.
That seems to be a key factor in what would I would call a tactical pause in U.S. military operations, because Iran has been able to continue to fire a significant volley of cruise missiles and ballistic missiles and drones, even over the past 2 weeks, on top of the exchanges that have happened these past several months.
And Javed Ali, the former director of counterterrorism at the National Security Council, says our stockpile of weapons also comes into play here.
Whatever that inventory of Iranian weapons still is, it has depleted the defensive capabilities of the United States and the allies in the region. The
president says talks are going on right now. He said that before, so we'll, you know, this again, get back to us when something happens.
Yeah, I would wait and see.
Some advanced underwater tech is being credited with helping locate a missing flight 74 years after it vanished.
This is crazy they weren't able to find this.
1952, a Pan Am flight called the Clipper Endeavor, but it was carrying 64 passengers and 5 crew members from Puerto Rico up to New York City when the engines failed right after takeoff. So that forced the pilot to make what was described as a violent water landing.
Yeah, I guess so.
The plane sank in less than 3 minutes and remained missing for decades. That all changed last month when the plane was located at the bottom of the Atlantic, nearly 2,000 feet down. News Nation talked to Tony Romeo. He's the CEO of Deep Sea Vision, a company that helped find the wreckage.
We were in the right area at the right time with our Hugin 6000 AUV, autonomous underwater vehicle. And we knew the folks that had searched this aircraft before, and they reached out and said, hey, could we make this happen? It took a number of parties coming together, including Fugro, another large vessel owner, of course, our equipment, the Air and Sea Heritage. So these kind of operations are very complex. They take time. And then you hope that you find the aircraft, right? You know, it's not a sure thing when you go out and look for these things.
Was there something specific about the crash that made it so hard to find for all these years? I mean, almost 75 years.
Yeah, that's right. It's actually in fairly deep water, and you can't dive down to it. You can't use homemade or off-the-shelf robotics for it. You need kind of commercial-grade, very high-depth equipment that can go down and has the right equipment, the right sensors. We use, in this instance, something called synthetic aperture sonar, and that's how we were able to get back a lot of these really pretty high-resolution images.
And in doing that, he says they have brought some closure to the families and descendants of the victims.
This was a big moment. There was 52 people, a number of the families here never actually got to see the bodies of their loved ones come home. They're still entombed in what you're looking at right inside of that plane. And I think it brings closure. There's the Pan Am logo, which we conclusively identified as being the DC C4 that we were looking for.
I wonder what was left of those people on that. That's that's a morbid thought.
Yeah, that's right. I was thinking all the fish in the sea, especially 2,000 feet down.
Yeah.
What would it do to a human body that low? I mean, the pressure itself. Just, I know you're dead.
Just bones, maybe?
I guess.
Beyond all that, though, Romeo says that one crash led to a lot of the safety procedures that exist today.
Every time you get on a plane and they run through that pre-flight briefing about your life jacket and your seat as a flotation device and buckling your seatbelts, all that is thanks to this flight going down. And I say thanks is not in a good way necessarily, because 52 people died here, but it led to some dramatic improvement, just like the Titanic did back in the early 1900s.
Yeah, thanks for your sacrifice.
Yeah, we appreciate it, guys. Now the woman has to give us instruction every time.
You've done a good thing. 74 years, a plane sitting at the bottom of the Atlantic. And as you heard him say, it was just kind of dumb luck that they found it.
You know, it's funny. You think about how many things we haven't discovered down there that are still out there that we're just waiting to discover if someone just happens upon it.
Well, the ship, I saw a map. It was a world map. All the shipwrecks.
Oh, my gosh.
During World War II.
Just
during those 5 years.
And they don't know where they're at.
It's incredible. Hundreds
found
of them. All right, when we come back, boy, wouldn't this be a surprise? Your dad sits you down and says, look, I know you've always wondered about your grandfather. Well, funny thing about that, but turns out he was Charles Manson.
Really?
That is what a young woman in California is dealing with, and we've got the story coming up next. Stay with us.
The Mid-Morning Mic Check with Mike Rogers and Austin York on DFW's number one for news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1080 KRLD. Depend on it.
I'm Mike and Austin here with you. You want to jump in? Please do. Shoot us a text. Give us a call at 945-766-1080. For the first time, CNN correspondent Caitlin Collins is speaking out about some of the verbal abuse that she takes from President Trump. She seems to be his favorite target for some reason.
CNN, right?
She's CNN.
Yeah, that's why.
That's probably
the reason.
Most recently, it happened at the White House Correspondents' Dinner this past weekend.
I want to personally congratulate CNN's Caitlin Collins on receiving her award. It was all about me. It's a fake. She shouldn't get the award. It was a fake, but I didn't mind. I said, Caitlin, congratulations. But it was fake. There's no question about it. But she's a young, attractive woman. She never smiles. I said, Caitlin, do you have a smile? Smile. You have a nice position. You're at CNN fake news. You should be a happy person. So smile, Caitlin. Just smile.
I'm just obsessed with that. Last night, Collins sat down with Jon Stewart on The Daily Show.
I've covered Trump for 10 years. And so I've listened to pretty much all of his speeches for 10 years, with very little exception. And so I actually think it's helpful for other people to be able to listen to them in their entirety, which people really don't that much these days. In the room, I think I was not surprised when he insulted me. That happens pretty regularly inside the Oval Office.
Yes.
This is just a bigger venue where it was happening.
Uh-huh.
What was most surprising to me was the room was filled with a lot of his staffers, his cabinet, his allies, Republicans in Congress. It was so quiet in the room during the president's remarks.
Dead crickets in there. She says that if asking questions that annoy the president is what sets him off, and too bad.
I want anyone to be able to listen to what I'm asking, whether that's at a briefing or during a moment with the president, and think, you know, I want to know the answer to that too, or that is a good question. I don't want it to only serve one audience or one political leaning. I want anyone, you know, from my family in Alabama to people in the White House, to people in Washington, to be able to hear that answer or hear that question and think, what is the answer to that? And so
the answer is very clearly, you should smile more.
But here's the thing, if you're waiting for her to snap one day and push back publicly, she says that's not going to happen.
It's really not about me, and I don't want it to be about my reaction. And so I think if you let it become about that, then it becomes a back and forth between the two of us. And instead, I think it's more effective to remind people in those moments when he is insulting me or when he is criticizing me,
mm-hmm.
About the question I asked or the reporting that I did that he was so angry about in this moment. And so I just think in those moments, it's important to put the reminder back on the work, on the question, and on the non-answers that we get.
So for now, I guess it sounds like she's just going to keep quiet, take the high road. And,
love this. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. The fact that you're going to get some tough questions, you might get some angry responses. It's not about you. Reporting, you always hear, as a reporter, I used to be, the story's not about you. It's about what you're covering. And the fact that she's not making it about her, trying to take it, that's perfect response and perfect way to handle
it. And frankly, if she did do something like that and snap back at him, and then you get the whole thing. Oh, an emotional woman.
Well, she shouldn't. Helen Thomas used to be this person in the White House press room all the time. Every president hated Helen Thomas. They never said it always publicly. Sometimes they would jab at her, but not often. But she kept the story about them and the questions.
She'd
not
always
about
be
her.
She'd always sitting in there in the first row, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wasn't she like UPI or something?
And she got always the first question because she was the most senior. Right. And they're like, all right, Helen, what do you got for me? They'd roll their eyes.
All right, well, here we go. Imagine, now just imagine this for a minute, finding out that your grandfather is Charles Manson.
When I stand on the mountain and I say, do it, it gets done.
In 1969, Manson, along with members of his cult known as The Family, murdered the actress Sharon Tate, who was 8 months pregnant, and six others over a two-night reign of terror.
It is a scary thing to find out about yourself. I would have never imagined I would be handed these cards in life.
26-year-old Sophia Maddox discovered that her grandfather was the monster Manson when her father took an ancestry DNA test.
Who's your dad?
You know.
Can you say it for me?
Charles Manson.
Oh, that would be a real punch in the gut, wouldn't it?
Aaron Moripovich saying, you're not going to believe this.
That's like that, Dad, how do you break the news? Look, there's a reason that I haven't talked about him a lot. Well, Sophia didn't take it well.
I always took really great pride in being this moral, good person. And then you find out your grandfather's Manson.
And now she is part of a new documentary on Hulu entitled My Grandfather Charles Manson.
Okay.
Did you feel there was evil in your blood?
I never felt like, are we evil? I was questioning how could someone I'm related to be so evil? And inherently it's like, okay, did I inherit any of that? But I never really believed we were evil people. Like, we were very normal.
How do you feel now?
Look, I shouldn't laugh because I'm sure it's traumatic. But at the end of the day, look, you're fine. Are you acting
That's
like
right.
him? Do you have an urge to go slash him on his throat?
She's fine.
Do you have an urge to start a cult and live out in the desert with some people?
Think about it, though. What if you're dating some guy and you're kind of, got a relationship going, and he says, well, tell me about your family.
No, let's not. Let's just continue our drinks. How about that?
Let's order now.
That's right.
All right, when we come back, learning the tricks of the Santa trade at the world's biggest Santa convention.
The Mid-Morning Mic Check with Mike Rogers and Austin York on DFW's number one for news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1080 KRLD. Depend on it.
Well, it is Christmas in July in Sweden, where dozens of Santa Clauses and Mrs. Clauses and a lot of elves, too, have gathered for the annual World Santa Claus Congress.
What?
They've been doing this for more than 70 years. It's mainly to entertain the kids, but it's also a chance for all those Santa surrogates to share some tricks of the trade.
Hey, I found when I'm Santa, this is how you keep that beard nice and white.
That's exactly right. That is, listen, I had this one kid in my lap, and he had an accident.
He peed all over.
Right. So they're going to have Christmas sing-alongs this year, gingerbread house construction, and gift wrapping classes, all capped off with a big Christmas parade. But organizers say they're going to have Santas from as far away as Japan this year. They don't celebrate Christmas in Japan, do they?
I have never seen a Japanese Santa. I would
like to see a Japanese.
That would be funny.
That would be interesting. Today is July 28th. 20 years ago today, back in 2006, that was the day Mel Gibson went on his alcohol-fueled anti-Semitic rant.
You do things that go against good judgment. A few drinks later, and I was in the back of a police car wailing, so...
A few drinks later, do you know how many?
No, I don't, but I know it's tequila.
Oh, yeah, that'll do it.
Tequila will, yeah.
Make you do some crazy things.
26 years ago today, it was back in 2000, Kathy Lee said goodbye to Regis. It was her last show.
Thanks for the memories, and we really mean that. So, goodbye. Thanks for everything. It was great 15 years.
I love you.
Wow, not an overly sentimental goodbye there from
all I remember
Reg.
Is that was such a big deal, and his ratings really went up after she left, which is sad.
1945, on this date, a U.S. Army B-25 bomber crashed into the side of the Empire State Building.
With visibility down almost to zero, traveling at 200 miles an hour, the bomber crashed with terrific impact into the 78th and 79th floors of the building.
A
horrific.
Smashing through seven walls.
That killed 14 people and injured two dozen others. Now, Betty Lou Oliver was there that day. She was an elevator operator back when they still had those. She was up on the 80th floor when the plane hit the building. The impact threw her out of the elevator and onto a concrete floor. And there was fire in there, so she had severe burns and multiple fractures. They had to lay there for quite a while for the first responders to get up to her. Now, when they got there, they put her on a stretcher and rolled her back into that same elevator, which was still working, to get her down to the ground floor. But just five floors down,
oh my gosh,
the cable snapped, and the elevator plunged 75 stories to the ground. A complete free fall. And they still don't know how exactly, but somehow Betty Lou, or Elevator Girl, as she came to be known, survived.
You ever get a feeling it's just not your day?
That's a bad day, man.
Yeah.
To this day, she still holds the record for the longest survived elevator fall.
I remember as a kid, for some reason, I always had a fear of the open elevator shaft.
Yeah.
That for some reason, that there would have a door open and I would just stumble right into that thing and fall to my death.
And that happened. What are you thinking going down the 75 stories? You're just, well, okay. It's been a good life.
Yeah, I guess.
Today just, today was my day.
If your elevator starts that free fall, just jump.
Hey, and happy birthday to David Johnson.
Okay.
Business analyst.
All right, David Johnson.
He will not reveal his age. He's a young man.
60.
60? Hey. She's going to thank you for that. That's it for us. Rogers, Austin, New York, Mid-Morning Mic Check. Thanks so much. Chad Benson's in next. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock.